Hello and welcome to Nourishing Solutions Telesummit. So I'm excited you've joined us again today, and I'm sure that you've been enjoying the morsels that we've been giving you each day with all the different speakers. And today is no exception. So I'd like to introduce to you our speaker today. Her name is Melanie Rudnick, and Melanie is a New York-based life coach, writer, blog, mom, wife, friend, and lover of life. She has a passion for helping people understand that happiness is a choice, and life doesn't always have to be so serious. Melanie strives to provide her clients and followers with simple solutions on how to love life today and realize that there is so much more to life. She has contributed to various online publications, as well as built a large following on her own blog at her website, melanierudnick.com. So hello, Melanie.
Hi.
How you doing?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks for being here. I'm happy that you're part of the summit, and I'm excited to chat about loving life.
One of my favorite topics.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that in your bio. Huh? Life doesn't have to be so serious. All right.
True.
So, yeah. So would you like to share with us in the audience a little bit about how you came to blogging and coaching and kind of a little bit about your story?
Sure. So I've always kind of had a passion for helping people and was always the friend that everybody came to asking for advice. And at some point in my early 20s, I kind of was trying to figure out what I wanted to do with my life and contemplated going back to school for psychology, and then stumbled upon the field of life coaching and entertained the idea of it, but had to do a lot of work myself because I was battling some of my own demons at that time. I had been dealing with some loss. My sister passed away when I was only 17, and so that was a big factor in my life. I was battling an eating disorder at the time. I had moved to New York City from Cleveland and was kind of lost as far as what my life was all about at that point. So started doing some inner soul searching and really got into reading and kind of learning about myself, and got into some therapy and really became very fascinated with just becoming the best person that I could possibly be and understanding myself as well as I possibly could. And when the timing was right and I had done enough work on myself, I trained. I did two trainings for coaching. One was with a woman, Martha Beck, and a second one was with a woman named Brooke Castillo. And her training I did was more focused on weight loss coaching. And so with that, I took my own experiences of fully recovering from the eating disorder that I had, as well as some tools that she taught, and incorporated that into my coaching practice as well. So I do a lot of different types of coaching. I do deal with weight loss as well as disordered eating and just general unhappiness in life, anxiety, parenting, you name it, I can help you with it. So just really love teaching people that happiness is a choice and that, you know, you can actually change the way you feel by the way you think. So that's a little bit about me.
Well, great. Yeah. Yeah, you've had, it sounds like, quite the journey of just your own development and self-discovery and learning to love and work with your body. So that's, yeah, and those are great things, and it's something that I'm sure you really are able to provide a good perspective for your clients into when they're going through similar things too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I tend to share a lot of personal stories because some of the people who have mentored me that I've admired the most are the people that have shared their own struggles. I find that so many people walk through life hiding the way that they really feel and things that are going on with them because they think they're alone in this world with the way they feel about themselves. And the reality is we all have struggles, and so I like sharing what I've been through and what I've learned in order to help as many people as I possibly can.
Yeah. Yeah, stories can be so powerful, and it's, you know, it's really interesting. Once you start to really delve into working with people, then you find it's like the story becomes really universal.
Mm-hmm.
And,
exactly.
You know, we really are just all one. I mean, we have this different flavors or colors on the surface, or our stories may be the details and the events of the story may be slight or are different, but when you look at the underlying theme, then it's really the same universal story of growth, of healing, of self-awareness, the classic hero or heroine's journey that we all go through.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So, and it's, yeah, and to think that we're alone in that is really a misperception because it's quite a universal theme.
Yeah, it's so amazing. I mean, just about everybody struggles with the same things. It just manifests a little bit differently for everybody.
Yeah, totally. So would you like to tell us a little bit about your story with food and making peace with that?
Sure. I guess I should say it all began when I was a child. I was actually underweight as a child, and kids made fun of me because I was so skinny. And, you know, some people think, oh, well, that's not a real problem. But as a child, it was actually really painful. I remember coming home from school just crying my eyes out. You know, someone may call me chicken legs, and my teacher once asked me how my legs held me up because I was so skinny. And, you know, pretty crazy thing. So from a very young age, I learned to just hate my body. If there was something wrong with it, there was something different about it. It wasn't normal. And about a little bit before I went for left for college, it was a little shortly after my sister passed away, and I was a late bloomer, and my body started changing, and I noticed for the first time I kind of had some curves, and then went to college and gained that typical freshman 15 and totally freaked out. And so on the opposite end of, you know, hating the fact that I was too skinny, now I had this fear that I was going to blow up like a blimp and get too fat. And so late in my senior year in high school into my freshman year of college was when I started really restricting food. I had no idea anything about dieting because I had spent so much of my childhood trying to gain weight that I didn't really know what was healthy, how to lose weight. What, you know, I just had never, ever thought about that. So the only way I knew how to possibly lose weight was to restrict my eating. And what started off as, you know, not eating breakfast led to not eating breakfast or lunch, and ultimately ended up not eating anything at all during the day and just allowing myself to have dinner. But then because of the deprivation and I was so hungry, sometimes I would start to eat and then I would binge. And I at times did try to purge. I battled with laxatives for about a year, and I say fortunately was not able to make myself throw up because I think I probably would have gone down that road had I been able to. But I struggled from about 18 until about 30 with this starving and binging and just a constant daily battle of being terrified of food and just being obsessed from the minute I woke up until I went to sleep at night of what I was eating and what I wasn't eating and how good I was yesterday and how good I was today and how long I had been good for, and if I was going to be bad, I was going to be really bad. And it was just this constant struggle. And when I decided I was going to be bad, after the fact, there was the guilt, which made it even worse. So on top of feeling horrible physically, because I made myself so full, I was then miserable because I hated myself afterwards. And so it was just this constant cycle back and forth of being good and being bad, being good, being bad, being good and being bad. And it was around 30, you know, I'd been doing a tremendous amount of work on myself for years, and this was kind of the last piece of the puzzle. And I just woke up one day and I was like, I'm done. I don't want to do this anymore. And, you know, it was like a light bulb went off in my head, and I was like, I'm done. You know, I don't remember what the circumstances were. It wasn't like hitting rock bottom. Everything else in my life was really good. And it was like, I just don't want this anymore. And so I really had to reteach myself how to eat again, because I was so consumed with, you know, not eating and being afraid of food and always reading about the latest diets and no carbs and no dairy, no sugar, no gluten, no whatever it was that day, that I was completely out of touch with what hunger felt like in my body. I was so in my head that I didn't realize that my body, you know, actually knew these things, you know. And so I just started really thinking about that we're all born with the ability to eat when we're hungry and stop when we're full. I mean, you don't see babies overeating. Mm-hmm. They stop when they're satisfied. And so I started doing some reading and learning that the body is supposed to be hungry about every 3 to 4 hours. And so I started by looking at the clock, because I was so out of touch with my body. And I'd look at what time I ate breakfast, and then I would watch the clock. And at about 3 hours, I would check in with myself, and I would really, really tune into my body and think about how I was feeling physically. Mm-hmm. And then I gradually started introducing more food during the day, and I, you know, would get a sandwich and eat half of it and really pay attention to how my body felt. I would eat slowly, and I would stop after eating half of it and see, how does my body feel different than it did when I first started eating. And by doing this, it was a gradual process, but I retrained my body to really pick up on my hunger signals. And I started noticing that when I'm a little hungry, I have this dull ache in my belly. I have a little kind of nauseous pit in my throat. I sometimes get a little bit of a headache. I notice myself getting cranky. And so these were things that I eventually became aware of. And once I became aware of them, I would eat when I would notice those signals. And then, retrained myself to understand what it felt like to be satiated. And so I practiced also. I had a problem or an issue where I always felt the need to finish everything that was in front of me. And so I practiced being able to throw food away, even if it was one bite. I never cleaned my plate anymore. If it was half of a sandwich or if it was one bite of a sandwich that was left, I always made sure that I threw something away, because I wanted to train myself that you don't have to finish everything on your plate. And eventually, the longer I did exercises like this, the easier it got for me to really just know myself. And it was then that I stopped eating just because the clock said it was lunchtime. I stopped eating just because I was at a cocktail party and they were passing around hors d'oeuvres. I stopped eating because, I was somewhere and people, you know, couldn't understand why I wasn't eating. And I really just let all of that go. And I really just started paying attention to my body. And it's become such a natural thing for me at this point that I really just don't even think about food anymore. I started trusting my body and stopped listening to my mind, which is a tricky thing to really get a hold of. But there's a huge difference between being hungry in your head and being hungry in your body. And I had a teacher once that said, if a piece of grilled chicken won't satisfy you, then you're not really hungry. Because if you're actually physically hungry, then you could eat anything, you know, like a piece of grilled chicken, and you will feel satiated. Whereas if you're mentally hungry, you might not think a piece of grilled chicken sounds so appealing. and so, you know, it was just learning that it got me to the point where I trusted my body and I started indulging a little bit more. And so, you know, when I first started doing this, I was trying to eat pretty healthy while I was doing it. But understanding that everybody's bodies are different and everybody's bodies metabolize differently, I started just kind of experimenting with different things. You know, I had a teacher once that didn't eat fruit because she didn't like the way it made her body feel. And, you know, it sounds like a bizarre thing, but your body knows what it needs, and your body mm-hmm. knows what it can handle. And when you start trusting it, it's amazing what happens. You know, I realized that I can have a small dessert every night, and my weight stays the same. I don't eat an entire pint of ice cream anymore like I used to, but I can have a small bowl of it, and nothing happens. And so yeah. experimenting with different things and realizing I'm okay allowed me to stop fearing food, and it mm-hmm. taught me what my body could handle. And so that's kind of where I'm at today. It's, you know, food has become a non-issue. I eat when I'm hungry. It's fuel for my body, but I indulge. And I don't eat clean all the time. For me personally, everything in moderation is the way to go, because I'm a big believer that when you deprive yourself of anything, the grip that it has on you can become so powerful that instead of just being mm-hmm. able, again, to have a small slice of cake, you want to eat the whole cake. Because as soon as you think you can't have something, you want it. But if you know you can have something whenever you want it, the grip that it has over you doesn't have as much energy. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow, that's quite the story. Yeah, that's... Yeah, I mean, just the discipline and the persistence and the strength that it took just to retrain yourself to eat mm-hmm. and to connect with your body. I mean, that's big. I mean, that's mm-hmm. that takes a lot of courage and fortitude.
Thank you. So, yeah, I mean, cool. It's just amazing because the society, you know, we've all grown to just think is normal. There's just so much talk yeah. all the time of what to eat and what not to eat and what time of day, you know, don't eat past 7 p.m. and don't do this and do this and don't do that. And people talk about, you know, oh, I'm being good today, or I'm being bad today, or it's a cheat day, or, you know, and it's, yeah. we've created food and eating to be this drama that it doesn't need to be, because really it's just fuel. And it doesn't mean that you can't enjoy yeah. it, but it just means that it doesn't have to control you.
Yeah. Because it's, I mean, there's so much in society, like you're saying, is like put everything into this rigid box and trying to control things for you to, and the result is that it creates such a disconnect from our bodies and ourselves. Mm-hmm. It's like we're always focused outwardly mm-hmm. trying to get permission or guidance or whatever, rather than strengthening our intuition and finding the wisdom within, which it's already there.
Mm-hmm.
Like you
We're
say,
born
the body already knows what it needs.
Yeah, and yeah. I, you know, just that the whole idea of trusting your body, like our bodies are built to do this, you know, the way mm-hmm. a woman's body is built to carry a child. You know, our bodies are built to metabolize food. We need food to survive, but it's built to metabolize it as well. If you eat, you know, in quantities that are appropriate for your body.
Yeah. Yeah, and the only way you're ever going to know what that quantity is by tuning in and listening.
Mm-hmm. And yeah. experimenting, you know, what I might be able to eat more than the person next to me and not gain weight, but it's only through experimentation that I really believe you can figure that out, because everybody's bodies
yeah.
work a little bit differently.
Yeah, and what works for you now may not work 5 years ago, too. I mean, in five years from now, because we're always changing. And,
absolutely.
You know, once we hit menopause, then the hormonal okay. changes do their thing. And, mm-hmm. you know, then we're off into another realm of what does the body need now?
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, I mean, that'll definitely yeah. be a different chapter for me, but I believe, you know, and I guess I'll find out when it happens, that, you know, it'll just take a little bit more experimentation at that point. But, you know, I it's been a mantra of mine for a long time, is my body was built for this, and I've used it for different things, not just eating,
mm-hmm.
and it just, it makes me feel really at peace just trusting that it is. I mean, our bodies are machines that were built to do this, amongst other things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's, you know, when we're so disconnected from our bodies, like many of us are in this culture, it's, we look, totally lose sight of the fact that there's consciousness in our bodies, there's wisdom, there's knowingness. you know, when you look at, you know, I was reading some of Bruce Lipton's books, mm-hmm. I think Spontaneous Evolution. He was talking about it in this one, and it just really struck for me is, you know, the way that life has evolved on the planet from single cells to clusters of cells to organs to multi-system organisms to the human body. I mean, it takes an incredible amount of intelligence just for that to even happen. So by the time all of that comes to an apex in the human body, you know, you've got these trillions and trillions of cells that have got the history of evolution of what their place is, what their function, how they work, and they know what they need to do in order to work right. And they know what resources they need in order to function correctly. And so it's just amazing when you stop to consider just that the vast wisdom that's in our 50, 60 trillion cells that make up the body. It's like it's
amazing. And I think I get excited when I think about that stuff, because it's like, you know, we don't need to think about it so much. You know, we don't think about our heart beating. We don't think about, I mean, sometimes we think about breathing if you're doing yoga or breathing exercise or something, but there's so many things going on in our bodies that we're not even thinking about. And for some reason, eating and food has become this thing that we just think about and obsess about, and we want to be told what to do. And if you just pay attention, you can figure it out on your own. It's not, you know, unless obviously if there's a medical issue involved, then that's a different story. But, you know, in general, that knowledge is there. And, you know, I don't know if you've heard about mindful eating. People talk about mindful eating. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, I think kind of the way that I retrained myself was mindful eating. You know, turning the TV off, not doing anything while you're eating, but just paying attention to the food. I remember once doing an exercise at a workshop I was at where they gave us each one Hershey Kiss, and they had us put it in our mouths and close our eyes and savor that Hershey Kiss for as long as we possibly could. And the amount of enjoyment that I got from just sucking on this one little Hershey Kiss and letting the chocolate just melt in my mouth and really tasting it and focusing on it and enjoying every second of it, of having it in my mouth, made me realize, like, I don't need an entire bag of Hershey Kisses. In fact, this is so much more enjoyable than when I eat the entire bag, because when I eat the entire bag, I'm totally numb and I don't even taste it. And so, you know, for people who are looking to kind of relearn this, you know, turn the TV off. You know, don't have your hand in the bag of chips while you're sitting on the couch watching TV. It's like, because before you know it, the bag is empty and you don't even remember eating it. You know, I used to eat pints of ice cream like it was nothing. And I did an exercise once when I was relearning all of this with ice cream, and realized that, you know, after about 3 bites of ice cream, your whole mouth becomes numb and you don't even really taste it, which is really interesting, because it just made me realize it wasn't even the taste that I was enjoying so much. It was, you know, numbing out my feelings, or, you know, I was avoiding something when I was just devouring that pint of ice cream.
That's the direction I want to touch on for a minute too, is just the numbing out, and that, you know, what is it that we're really numbing out from? Because I think, yeah, there's such a huge component of that, of, you know, food has become, I mean, you take away all the marketing and everything of society pushing it on us, but it has become such a Band-Aid to stuff down and stuff down and stuff down. And, you know, how often do we really stop to think, what is it that I'm wanting to stuff down? What am I running from? What am I not wanting to deal with? And so I'm like snarfing down this bag of chips that I'm not tasting.
Mm-hmm. And this is something I touch on a lot with my clients, you know, the whole emotional eating component. You know, a lot of people use food. You know, you see old cartoons or on TV show people breaking up with a boyfriend or whatever, sitting with their big gallon of ice cream on their lap. And, you know, it's something that has become somewhat normal. You know, people tell me, oh, food is my friend. Food is always there for me. You know, food is not your friend. It's an inanimate object that we're giving so much power to. And, you know, it's no different than someone turning to alcohol or sex or drugs. You know,
totally.
Food can be something that we use to numb our feelings. And with so many of the people that I work with that use food when they're feeling emotional, really all they're doing is avoiding their feelings and using food to not feel. And what I always say is no feeling lasts forever. So the next time you want to grab for that pint of ice cream or whatever your vice may be, take a moment, if you can catch yourself before, because sometimes people do it without even realizing it.
Yeah.
And stop and think, like, what am I feeling right now that I'm trying to avoid? And then just sit with it and see what happens. Because no feeling is going to kill you. And no feeling lasts forever. And you know what? The best way to get over a feeling is to go through it. Because if you just numb it, it's just going to come back. You know, if somebody thinks like, oh, I'm so fat and disgusting and I hate my body, and when they think that thought, they feel really sad and depressed and unhappy with themselves. And then they go to the pantry and they get whatever it is that they go for, and they devour the food, and then they feel even worse. And it's a vicious cycle, because then when they feel worse, then they want to go back to the food and not feel the feeling. And the reality is just feel the feeling. It's not going to kill you. It's going to pass eventually. Every feeling does pass. It might hurt. Sometimes you might need to cry. You let it out, and you move on. It's a much better way to be. And, you know, allows you to deal with the real problem. You know, it's like food is kind of just like putting a Band-Aid on something and covering it up, but not actually ever healing the wound. And, you know, a lot of the feelings that we deal with that we want to avoid, if you just feel them, they ultimately usually go away on their own.
Yeah, they'll dissipate pretty quickly. Yeah. I like how you say that. It's like they're not going to kill you, because I say the same thing to my clients and even myself of, you know, it's just energy. It's energy that's been trapped in our bodies that's congested. And the only way it can resolve is by coming up and out, by us expressing and feeling them, and then it's done. And it's, you know, it's like it's only energy. It's not going to kill you unless you keep it stuffed down in you, unless you snarf down on the pizzas and the ice cream and whatever until you have health problems. Yeah, then it will kill you.
And one of the most amazing things is when you can catch yourself and actually see what happens if you don't go for the food. And you know, you'll be like so proud of yourself. So the cycle is, you know, cut right there. It doesn't mean it won't ever happen again. But for that instance, you're like, oh my gosh, I did it and I survived. And, you know, I didn't need that food. And I feel so much better than I would have had I eaten, you know, that whole bag of chips or bag of cookies or whatever. So there tends to be a sense of pride. You know, the feeling that you might have to feel might not be so enjoyable temporarily, but after the fact, you know, you'll not only have felt your feelings, you'll also have a sense of like, ah, I did it. And you know what? That wasn't so bad. You know, sometimes the anticipation of things is way worse than actually dealing with it. And it's going to come out eventually. So
yeah,
you deal with it the better.
Totally. Yeah, and once you start developing that pattern, it's like retraining yourself in your body, then you realize the feeling that you get on the other side of it, it's so worth it. You know, it's there's so much more meaning to it than the immediate gratification of wanting to stuff down your feelings.
So. Well, another component is just really focusing on our thoughts. People think if they hate themselves enough that they'll find motivation to eat healthier or exercise. And that might be true for a couple weeks. But, you know, people ask me sometimes about willpower. And I don't think that it's something that you have to really muscle your way through if you're being kind to yourself. I think willpower comes... it's actually really easy, and I don't even know if willpower is the right word for it, but when you start treating yourself lovingly and kind every day, instead of saying, you know, constantly focusing on what you don't like about yourself, when you start focusing on what you do like about yourself, you feel happier, and when you feel happier, exercising and eating healthier and doing things that are good for you becomes so much easier. You know, when I was in the midst of my disordered eating, it was like me constantly hating myself just kept me on that hamster wheel of negative behaviors because I just didn't feel good enough to find the energy to take care of myself. And it wasn't until I started trusting myself and loving myself that I was able to make, you know, really positive choices for myself. And it becomes so much easier because when you're not, you know, speaking horrible things to yourself, you know, like I said before, you feel better. And when you feel better, it's just easier to get up and do things. You know, I always say, would you say this to your loved ones? Would you say this to your best friend? Would you tell your best friend how disgusting she looked? Would you tell your child, you know, that she was gross? Would you, you know, would you tell your mom, you know, that she's disgusting? You just wouldn't do it. So why do we say
yeah, you don't.
To ourselves?
Yeah, I think it's because it's all internally, and we think that nobody's going to hear those words that we say to us, but they do show up in many other areas of our lives.
Absolutely.
But yeah, it's just, you know, when it's when you do things motivated by self-hate, it's just, it can't be sustained, really.
No.
And it's and it just creates so much more weight and heaviness around the action anyway. And like you were saying, it's like when you're loving yourself, then it's like a no-brainer. It's like, of course I'm going to do this because that's how I take care of myself. Why wouldn't I? You know,
yeah,
it's non-negotiable.
Absolutely. I laugh sometimes because I get really upset when I go to classes at the gym and the teachers are yelling out things that they think are motivating, like, you know, keep, you know, spin harder so you can eat that extra portion of mashed potatoes at dinner, or, you know, the one that recently that's been really getting me is, you know, summer's just around the corner. You've got to, you know, get into a bikini and you need your summer body. And, you know, I leave class getting, I'm like pissed off because I'm like, okay, first of all, you should love your body all year round. There's, you know, who's to say you're supposed to let yourself go in the winter and that now it's summer and so you got to be bikini ready. First of all, you can be bikini ready all year round because if you take care
anytime.
Of yourself all year round, it's not even something to think about. And I just, the motivation to do this so, you know, you can eat an extra portion, I go bonkers over it. You know, some people might like it, but I'm like, that's not what's motivating. I'm like, tell us that we should work
it's
hard
really upside down.
Feel strong. You know, I was an avid, I took this class at the gym for years that I was totally obsessed with where you chant positive affirmations while you're working out. And it was so powerful because you were saying things to yourself like, I'm strong. You know, I'm powerful, I have faith, I believe. And it was such an empowering class because you were saying positive things about yourself rather than, you know, focusing on trying to get rid of your love handles, which to me is coming from a really negative place, which is what we were talking about, you know, whether or not you can sustain motivation when it comes from a negative place. So I always think about things about just feeling strong and feeling, you know, I can do this when I'm exercising and just telling myself really positive things rather than, you know, focusing on what I want to change or what I don't like about myself.
Yeah. Yeah, I think our thinking or, what we tell ourselves has, I think that is one side of the coin and the emotional component is the other side of the coin. It's like the emotions is what is the glue that holds our thoughts together. So if we have this string of negative thinking of how much we hate ourselves, then the emotion of the hate is going to like glue that into our bodies, and then we're stuck in that loop.
Mm-hmm.
But, and it's, you know, talk a minute about just this, our thinking itself is, you know, so much of the eating is to avoid the feelings, and yet the feelings are really a byproduct or expression of the core of what we're really thinking about ourselves, of who we believe ourselves to be.
Yeah, your feelings always come from your thoughts. So when you think negatively about yourself, you don't feel good. When you think happy thoughts, you feel good. And, you know, it's the interesting thing about numbing ourselves with food is that you end up feeling even worse afterwards, because then it's the cycle of beating yourself up. So you already felt bad about whatever you were thinking about, and then you did something to try and avoid those feelings, but in turn ended up creating more negative feelings because you basically beat yourself up with food, and now you feel guilty about it, and you're worried about your body and what it's going to do, and you hate yourself because you can't control yourself, or whatever the story is that you're telling yourself. And so now you're actually creating more drama on top of whatever it was you were trying to avoid. Whereas if you just dealt with what you were trying to avoid in the first place, you would prevent the second drama from coming in.
Yeah, totally.
That makes sense.
Yeah, and it's, you know, if we really look at the thing that we're trying to avoid or prevent, you know, it's, like you're saying, it's our thinking. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because, you know, we look at whatever it is we're thinking about ourselves, and then we believe that that's it, rather than being able to stand back and say, oh, that's what I'm thinking. That doesn't necessarily mean that's who I really am or how I really am. You know, we believe our own stories, and then we act out on them.
Yeah, well, I always say, just because you think it doesn't mean it's true.
Yeah.
And the way that if I told you today, I can fly. I woke up this morning and I flapped my arms and I could fly. You would probably look at me like I have four heads and be like, what are you talking about? That's not possible, Melanie. You're crazy. And you would question that. And that's what I always say you have to do with your thoughts, because a lot of our thoughts, you know, I don't want to label them crazy, but a lot of our thoughts are untrue. But we just believe them because we think them. But you can question your thoughts the same way that you could question somebody else that you disagreed with. And that kind of loosens the grip of the thoughts that cause us pain, because two people can be dealing with the same circumstance and think about the circumstance completely differently and then feel completely differently. But the circumstance is exactly the same.
Yeah.
So there's definitely, you know, paying attention to your thoughts and the way you think about yourself. Or even, you know, people like to blame things for their misery. It's my job, it's my weight, it's my husband, whatever. It's actually what you're thinking about your job and your weight and your husband that's making you miserable. You might not be able to change those things. You might not be able to change your job, your husband, or your weight right now in this moment in time, but you can change the way you think about it. So.
Mm-hmm. Totally, yeah. So there's really no victims here. You know, it's just because we don't want to own what we're thinking and then how we've defined ourselves. Because it's, you know, I look at it as, you know, we are creators. We have the spiritual essence of who we really are. And out of that, we create all kinds of stuff. And so if we're looking at the creation of this litany of self-recrimination and then we buy into it, then, of course, that's what we're going to act out. You know, it's like this misplaced identity of you've told yourself the story about that's who you are, and now you believe it, and yet that's really not even who you are. You're the one that created this scenario, this persona. Mm-hmm. So unplug from that and get in touch with who is the person that created this persona in the first place. You know?
And you can change your story anytime you decide to.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and you can't necessarily control every thought that comes into your mind. You know, when I was pregnant, some of my old, habitual thoughts about my weight were creeping in. But because it had been a significant amount of time since I'd overcome all my food and eating stuff, it was like I was able to just notice the thoughts and see them almost as an outsider, and just they kind of passed through. Like it was like, oh, I see you. You know, you used to be around a lot, and I'm not listening to you. You know, it's kind of like, hey, I remember you, but I'm not going to pay attention to you right now. And so, when you start noticing your thoughts rather than believing everything you think, it's easy to let things go, and then that's when you can start changing the way you think about things.
Yeah, it just creates a space where you can just have more mobility rather than getting so wrapped up in the story. And it also just diffuses a lot of the emotions right there when you was like, I don't need to buy into that. I don't need to go down that path. I know where it will lead.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So, yeah, cool. So, you mentioned that you have a gift for people to get to know you some more. And, you know, for those who'd like to follow you on your blog, tell us a little bit about that.
So I have created something called my Happiness Cheat Sheets. It's 18 simple suggestions and lessons on how to love your life today. They're just little things that I have learned over the years that have helped me tremendously. They can pretty much be applied to everything. So if you're struggling with food and eating, you can apply some of those to those areas. You can apply them to your relationships. You can apply them to the way that you parent, the way that you show up at work, just basically however you are functioning in life on a day-to-day basis. And they're just little suggestions on how you can just feel more joy on a day-to-day basis. And you can receive that free download if you go to my website, melanierudnick.com. And you can just sign up there, and it will be sent to you for free. And if you sign up for my blog, I do write about eating and food at times, as well as tons of other stuff that will just help you feel happier on a day-to-day basis.
Nice. Yeah, it's interesting when you really start looking at getting to know yourself and addressing the relationship with food or your body, then you really find that there's universal concepts and tools that will really work for anything, not just for the food. And so it's, even though the food or the relationship with your body is the trigger that puts you on the journey, what you come away with at the end is really, you know, every facet of your life has been transformed. And it's like you said, you can just move. It brings you so much more happiness and joy. Mm-hmm. So that's very cool.
And as somebody who has been through so much with food in my past, it's sometimes I catch myself like just kind of chuckling because it's like amazing that I've come so far. If you had told me 15 years ago that I wouldn't even think about food anymore, there's no way I would have believed it was possible. You know, I would have had to have thought would have to have amnesia or something because I spent so much time obsessing about it for so many years. And it is possible. You know, you just have to believe it and tell yourself that it is possible and just start trusting yourself, trusting your body.
Yeah. And just know that it knows. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So
it does.
Good. So, well, thank you, Melanie.
Thank you.
I really appreciate, you taking the time and sharing your story with us and, you know, tips of how you can start looking at things for the audience, how you can start looking at your relationship with your food, with your body, with how you're approaching just yourself. And, just learn or take what Melanie has given today and just use it as something to inspire you to say, there's different ways of looking at things. I don't have to be stuck in the same loop, you know, even if it's not the extreme of what she experienced, but if there's commonalities, as we're saying at the beginning, it's like it's a universal story that we go through. So, and when we come out of it, then it's just we have all these nuggets that we like to share. So I encourage all of you in the audience to go check out Melanie Rudnick's site and get her download of her little happiness sheets and just get to know her more. So thank you, Melanie, again for spending
thank
the time
you,
today. I really appreciate it. Yeah, for sharing your story and all that you've been through. That's really inspiring. So,
sure.
Yeah. All right, so just join us again tomorrow for our next speaker, and we'll see you then. Thanks so much.